track session number 28773, reel 5.
Good evening, Mr. Sim.
Good evening.
Last time when we were speaking, we stopped that you were when you were in Inverurie.
That's right, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you were about to move to Orkneys.
Yes, I think if I remember correctly, that would have been the move at that time, yes.
And was that during 1940?
40, that's right, just after Dunkirk.
And when you mentioned Dunkirk as well, can you remember how you felt, how the morale was in the within the regiment after Dunkirk?
Well, yes, morale was good. No, well, I hadn't appreciated the real problem with the evacuation from Dunkirk and what it meant. We just thought, oh well, that I've been chased out, we'll stand by and ready to repel any attack, shall we say, yeah.
And was there news coming through, you know, was there news coming through in the papers or the radio or even from the other soldiers?
Oh, it would have been from other soldiers coming. And the papers, radios and that were, they were scarce, as far to us anyway. We didn't have many radios with it. So it came from the papers, what they read, and other soldiers, because we saw soldiers coming back from France, you know, in a sort of rather unkempt way, you know, they'd been chased out, hundred times to be washed and shaved and that, and they past comment, you know, things weren't good, and that was it. And we were more or less on guard, ready to repel any any possible attack, and that. And that's the situation as it was. Yes, I would attend the yes, we moved up to Haddo House at that time, when you mentioned, and and things were scarce, well, weapons, ammunition, clothing, any war material that affected us was scarce, you know. I remember our uniform had to last a lot longer than it would have had to do in normal circumstances. So, and ammunition, you know, were limited to what ammunition we had. That's what I can remember of it, you know, that things had to got a lot tighter than they had been.
And when you mentioned the uniform there about, you know, it had to last longer, does that mean that you had maybe to do a bit of mending or anything?
That's right, yeah. They started getting frayed and, see, down about the bottom of your trousers or just in the normal wear and tear, in normal times you would have got an exchange of clothing. Now it meant that you had to just carry on wearing this patch in a bit, and until they thought it was more, they wouldn't service any more. So that was it, yeah. The things. Same with boots. You're fairly down to your uppers then, you know, the soles, you had holes in the soles before they got mended, and things like that, you know.
Was there a cobbler with the regiment?
I think there was at one time, but what I can remember, we sent them, you know, your boots for repair. You gave them into your company stores, and they sent them away to be repaired. I think like cobblers or shoemakers would have had a contract with the army to do the repair works. I don't remember if we had a cobbler or not, but probably we had, because usually you carried one person who had a tradesman and do the repairs. Sometimes you had a carpenter in the, you know, the shops, you know, and various. So I think we would have a cobbler and a farrier. You would have had a farrier, you know, horses at that time. But, yeah, so I presume we'd have had a cobbler in the battalion.
And when your boots went away, did you get another pair first?
Well, we had two pairs of boots. We had two uniforms, like with a battle dress, and we still had our kilt at this time. We had still had the kilt at the, and that. So, and two pairs of shoes or boots. So we had another pair to slip into. Yeah.
And did you wear your kilt much at this point?
No. In fact, with this coming to a stage where we had to hand in our kilt then. It was handed in at Haddo House. But I do remember it was rather reluctant to hand the kilt anyway. That's a personal point. We had to hand it in there. And we got what they call the battle dress trousers and blouse.
And was this the first time you'd gotten the battle dress? Was this something new?
Yes, it would have been. We got it in sort of dribs and drabs, so we didn't just get a complete outfit, but I'm sure when they handed our kilt in, we got a pair of trousers, battle dress trousers, in lieu.
Did you kind of feel the kilt was part of the Gordons or something?
Yes, that's right, yes. And quite a number of lads preferred it. You know, the new trousers started easier to for dressing or that, you see. And others would have preferred the kilt. So anyway, the kilt was handed in.
And the battle dress uniform, was it a nice, comfortable material?
It wasn't a comfortable, but it was a rough material, but it had more room, you know. It was like a blouse, so you weren't just closed there, you know. A tunic was fairly tight round about you, but you had this feeling of for expansion, you know, freedom, you know. So that, but it was a rough material, you know. There's no lining on the inside.
And you mentioned during this period as well that, you know, items were scarce. You know, you got your uniform.
Yes.
What about food? Was there ever any problems with food?
Well, I think rations became tighter. For a start, we had a fairly good ration allowance, but as the war crept on, it started getting tighter. You know, I suppose the sugar allowance and things like that got a lot less. Whereas before, it may have been allowed quarter pound of sugar. It was cut down to, say, 2 ounces. Per person, not per man. So there was that cut back. Potatoes, I think, and oatmeal was not rationed at this time. So you got, if you took porridge and that, you got the same allowance of that oatmeal and tatties, you know. So that was, that's the thing I can think of. I mean, eggs would have been plentiful too. But the ones like sugar, what else, tea and things, something that had to be imported was cut back.
I was wondering, you know, how it affected you with being in the likes of Inverurie area, you know, a big farming area.
Yes, well, it wasn't the so-called black market yet, but you could make contact with a farmer or that. You could get eggs, you know, if need be. So, no, for these staple diets, oatmeal, milk, eggs, meat, potatoes, staple diet, it didn't affect us up in this area. Because we had, well, at that time, summertime harvest, you know, the oats, crops were being cut and that and threshed. So, no, the staple diet food, you weren't affected. And so overall, if you stuck to that, you were quite well off.
And you mentioned, you know, after Dunkirk, the threat of attack. Did you kind of feel that the Germans would attack you then?
Yeah, well, the news that we got was good. Well, to that effect, you know, an attack was imminent. Well, after Dunkirk, there was a slight pause. Even the Germans had to stop and recoup, you know, re reconsolidate or something like that, you know, to regroup, just to get all their things together. Because they had a rush too and captured a lot. So they wanted a rest at the same time. So there was a breathing space to that effect, and then they tried it with an air attack. But the possibility of a seaborne landing from Israel was quite strong, like around Aberdeen and in the Murray coast, and even the east coast of Scotland. So they put up roadblocks along the beaches, you know, big blocks of concrete and things like that. And then you put on a guard away around the coast too, manned by men, soldiers, in case of, you know, to stand by in case of an attack. And if you did leave your camp, that you took weapons with you and a bandolier of ammunition. In the event of a surprise enemy attack, you were always ready to go to the nearest unit if you couldn't get back to your own one.
And were you involved with any of this, you know, the roadblocks and things like
that? Oh yes, you had that. They were putting roadblocks, you stopped vehicles at night, you know, as supposed to assist the civil police or the civil power. Yes, it took checks and cars and that. I don't know if you remember, but there were roadblocks, like concrete bunkers, built at vulnerable points in different and roads, you know, in case an attack by enemy tanks, you know, then you could fire and perhaps stop them and things like that. But you did have own roadblocks where you stopped vehicles or a horse and car and say, checked out who was going, who were you, where were you going to, yeah.
And was this, were these roadblocks, was there a lot of them through the northeast?
There were these bunkers, quite a number of them from the northeast. The roadblocks manned, they were put up not at the same time every day or every month, but just at different areas, just ad hoc, if I put it like that, you know. Maybe stick a roadblock on this day just to get for supplies so that people wouldn't know. With the roadblock coming up and be prepared for it, they would be taken by surprise too.
And did you do that quite a few times?
Did a few times, not a lot really, no.
Okay. And the bunkers, what kind of thing was the bunkers?
Well, they were only concrete buildings, you know, they were about 6-8 feet, 7 feet high at the most, you know, maybe dug into the ground, and they had slits where you could look through or fire a rifle through, you know, and that's what they were. A concrete shelter, really, and that was you would fire the anti-tank weapons, which they were prepared, built for as against tanks, weren't powerful things, you know. We had what they called a boy's anti-tank rifle. Boys was spelled B-O-Y-E-S, named after the inventor of this particular anti-tank weapon. And things like that, and then there may be a small 2-pounder gun. But that's what they had to perhaps stop a tank. And that was the intention for them. There are still one or two in this area yet, you know, but most of them have since been demolished. And you'd have to know where they were, because sometimes they're not obvious when you're driving along the road. So.
And were you involved with the bunkers as well?
I would say not. We knew they were there, and if need be, we could go into them, you know.
Okay. And you mentioned there about when you went out, you also carried, was it your ammunition as well?
Yes, a bandolier, usually 50 rounds of rifle, ammunition for your rifle, and took your rifle with you. But, again, that was in case of a surprise attack, you know, you weren't.
And was there lots of other units in the area that...
Yes, there were quite a lot of soldiers up in the northeast, from Aberdeen right up to Inverness and so on. Because that was where the Highland Division were assembled, you know, and that they are spread out over that area. There have been in Elgin, Forres, Nairn, Inverness itself, you know, Aberdeen would have been quite a lot of troops in Aberdeen, you know, Peterhead, Fraserburgh, and so against that. So, but they were well, quite well organised, you know, but you had, you were out a lot of nights, you know, a lack of sleep was a problem, well, I found, you know, because you're out all night, just standing by in case of anything happening. And then you trained during the day. Sometimes, if you had been out all night, oh, well, maybe started later on in the day, but you're still working, you know. So that's it.
And when you were out at night, you know, maybe on a roadblock or something, mm-hmm. did you ever come across anything, or was it all just quick?
No, too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were speaking about the roadblocks and things at night.
Yes, that's right.
Did you ever, anything happen?
No, never found anything happen, no. One or two scare stories, or someone along the coast, further along, would have caught a couple of spies, you know, but anything, where I was, no, would never have anything happened. So it was up there, we were up all night, you know, and I may have had a relief for a half an hour or something when you were out, you know, just where you could sort of relax slightly, but you're awake all night.
And when you were out like that, mm-hmm. Did you have any type of shelter or anything?
No, well, depends on the countryside. Maybe you were beside a farm building to that, then you could go in there and kind of take shelter, or take shelter for half an hour, and then you went out into the open again. So you could utilize buildings like that to make life a bit easier for you, yeah.
And was this still during the summer, or was this during winter?
Winter and summer. Although summertime, well, weather was better too. Things were a lot, maybe easier, you know, it was daylight, say, up to near midnight and that, and it wasn't always cool. It may have been wet sometimes, but overall it was more pleasant in the summertime than winter.
Did you have any type of protective clothing, you know, like...
No, we didn't, we had great coats at that time to wear, especially winter, and you had what they called a ground sheet, which was a sort of waterproof, but it just covered the top half of your body, and that your legs usually got wet, you know. So that was the clothing you had. You had gloves, well, in the winter time you got woolen gloves to wear, but... That's about all. And then, you could wear a balaclava under your steel helmet. You know, the woolen balaclava, if someone had knitted one for you.
Oh, the army didn't give you this, did they?
Well, they gave you what they called a cap comforter. It was like a short scarf, but it was double, and you could fold it up so that it came over your head, as I said, a cap comforter. But just the something woolen, but it didn't come right over because you wouldn't have seen if it come right over your head, you know. But that's what they gave you for instead of a balaclava. Like a balaclava is close fitting and comes over your ears and down into your neck. But this one just did your head.
Okay. And do you remember when you got told that you were going to go to the Orkneys?
Yes, it was not a secret. You'll be going to Orkneys in a month's time or something like that. So there's no secret in those days, you know, you'd be moving off to Orkneys. Later on, again, security became tighter and any movement, troop movements, were kept low-key. You know, so we didn't spread the word, and you know, just have got a couple of days' notice that they'd be moving. Although the battalion headquarters knew you'd be, and they made certain preparations with stores and things like that. But they had to be either packed up, bundled up, and ready to be loaded onto trucks. So they have given a wee bit more notice. And from that, of course, rumors circulated over moving so-and-so, you know, all built upon, oh, the storm is packing away some gear. They must be moving, you know. So that's how rumors started. And of course, as a rumor spreads, someone else enlarges upon it. You know how these rumors go. So that is, yes, that's how the story is. Certain amount of truth in it, you know, but maybe very little truth and a lot of rumor. Yeah.
Okay, then. And so to go to the Orkneys as well, was there just a group of you going, or was it you yourself? Or
usually a group, you know, it all went at one time. Maybe a company at a time till they got to their destination. Sometimes the whole battalion would have moved, but in this case, I think they took it, say, two companies to go up this week, and then the rest will follow. So they did it in a fairly quick move.
And do you remember how you got up to Orkney?
By boat. I forget. Whether we've got the trawler or just a, maybe like the St. Clair, the passenger boat would have been used for that, you know, it would have been commandeered by the Army or the Navy and used to transport people. It was a short trip, of course, they didn't, and like it lasted a day or 2 days, so the commandeering would have been just a short time.
And was that from Aberdeen?
Aberdeen, yes. Mm-hmm.
And can you remember anything about the boat?
We came out of Kirkwall, and then I was only landed there, I was only there a short time, you know, so I was sent back to another, what they called an anti-tank company, back onto the mainland. So that, anyway, that was a trip to Orkney, to my knowledge. And then...
And what were your impressions of Orkney?
Victor?
What was your impression of Orkney?
Oh, bare. This time, well, to come near the winter time, well, it coming into the winter, so, and the lights at nights were coming, closing in, you know, and it wasn't, Spartan life, you could put it like that at that time. And there was quite a lot of troops and the naval personnel in Orkney at the time, no Scapa Flow, etc. And so a lot of people moving around, especially a Saturday when you're sort of free day and you got into Kirkwall or that, you know, and then all they bumped into was sailors or soldiers, you know.
Can you remember where you were stationed there?
Well, that had been coming into September, October.
Oh. But can you remember the camp or something?
Oh, the camp. Well, it was Nissen huts and that, and even then there was some tented accommodation too, you know. All being built up in a hurry, you know.
And which accommodation were you in?
Nissen hut. Well, quite good, you know. Well, it was fairly substantial, but they were cold, you know, all in the summertime. Well, there was one stove in the middle of the hut itself, you know, so at the far end, the heat didn't always reach the end, but they were quite good, yeah. Fairly substantial, corrugated iron, of course, and the frost, like then, the frost came right through, and that. But apart from that, it was quite good, yeah. A good dry floor, you know, the concrete and that. And the beds they had, and then there were some of these, as I said, you know, a trestle and three boards, and you could. It was going to hang clothes up, you know, if you had a coat hanger or something like that, you know. So overall, they were reasonably comfortable.
And were you still using palliasses at this time?
Yes, that's right. I would have still had a palliasse, you know, get a bundle of straw and fill your palliasse, and that is your mattress for that season, you know, until the summertime came, you know, and I think they emptied a palliasse out, you know, and they got fresh straw.
And what about blankets? Did you get blankets as well?
Yes, I think we got 3 blankets. I think in the winter time we've got an extra one, 4, mid-4, because you needed them there. But, so that is it, 3 blankets. Yeah.
And can you remember where about in the hut you were? Were you near the stove? Or?
Oh, I think I was, no, I didn't want near the stove because everyone else crowded around the stove and they probably sat in your bed. So you are better, some ways, away from the stove, you know, you could get there. Because there was always someone, if you did sit down, at the end of your bed or that, you know. And if you wanted to sleep, you never got to, like, sleep with us at the far end. Although it's colder. Yes, you did get more peace, you could get stressed out. Of course, that lasted until midnight, you know, because by then most people fell asleep. And there was what they called a lights out. That is a routine, 10 o'clock, lights out. So you weren't allowed to have lights on in their huts after that time. Although some people did try it, maybe burn a candle or that, they got hold of a candle. But if you had electric light, then the lights went out at 10 o'clock.
And how many men would have been in the hut?
In the hut, 24, I would think. I think there's 12 on each side. That would have been about 12. 24, I think it was. And if accommodation was tight, they squeezed in more, you know. But for average, it would have been 24 men in a hut.
Okay. And would there have been any conscripted men in with you?
Yes, oh yes. So they came into, they made up the ranks, you know. There was no difference between them. You know. Some of them may have moaned a bit more than others, but in general, they all looked on at harmony was quite good, you know.
And when you spoke about lights as well, would the blackouts have been started by then?
Yes, it would have been started. So there would have been, I try to remember whether they blackened the windows, you know, with paint or that, or just using an old blanket in the first. There weren't many windows in that. There were 2 reasonably small ones at each end of the hut. That's all there was in the daylight factor. We didn't have like a dormer window coming out at the side at this stage and the thing. Later on, I think they incorporated a window halfway down the hut. Like, but at this time, there was only the gable windows at each end of the hut.
Okay. And would you have still been getting inspections in this hut?
Oh, yes, that carried on. It's one thing you have to maintain is a cleanliness, you know, a reasonable standard of cleanliness in the camp, and make sure that things are kept, well, for the case of cutting down and vermin or things like that. But for the general health of people, though, keep yourself clean, make sure you're washed, and get yourself under where you are living in a decent state. Oh, yes, that was kept up.
Okay. And you mentioned as well when you went to the town, you know, you saw sailors and things. What about recreation when you were up in North?
Well, football was always a sideline, you know, you have a kick about. But there was nothing more at this time. Oh, I think it was a football team, sort of slightly organised. And that is what. Otherwise, you're left to your own devices to go into town and just have a wander about. And of course, there were canteens put up, say YMCA. Well, the Women's Voluntary Services, although it wasn't known by that name at that time, they put up canteens, Church of Scotland, YMCA, and that. So, there's a sort of canteen there where you went and got a cup of tea and a home bake, like a, what do you call them, just a little bap, you know, or thing like that. So that is a sort of recreation you had.
Do you want to stop for a minute to have a drink?
Yes. Sorry about that.